There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 287. And my guest today is Darren Gale, the Vice President for Operations for X Energy, a company that is developing high-temperature gas-cooled reactors and was an awardee on the recent advanced reactor demonstration program announcement. Welcome, Darren.
Rod, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today and look forward to speaking with you.
Now, I'm looking forward to hearing about your project, and I will disclose to the listeners that Darren and I have known each other for a while because we crossed paths when we were both working for B&W Empower back in the 2000. Well, I was there 2010 to 2013, and I think Darren was there when I got there and was still there when I left.
That's correct. It was, the Empower program was similar to the X Energy ARDP program in that it's a cost share opportunity with the Department of Energy. They are looking to partner with private and public companies who are developing and deploying nuclear power plants, and knowing full well that it's going to take some government involvement, some government investment in order to get through these first of a kind plants. So very similar to before, Rod, we're doing this with an advanced reactor at X Energy, and looking forward to the next several years to make this happen.
Well, I'm cheering for you guys to have a little bit better success than what we ran into with Empower. Hopefully you don't have any activist investors who are right, knocking at your door saying you better perform more quickly.
Yeah. It's so, the model now is we are actively looking at investors outside of X Energy. So X Energy is privately held right now. Cam Gafarian is the founder and financial backing at this point in time. But he and several of his folks are looking at other outside investments. So he is getting in front of this as opposed to sitting back and waiting. He has lined up several folks to help with the investment as it goes along. So clearly this program, several key parts of it, right? So first, right now, we're in the licensing, design and licensing phase. So we'll complete the final design and licensing over the first 2 or 3 years. And then you get into the construction of a plant aspect of that. And so Energy Northwest, who is our partner in this, they would take over most of the financing then once you get to the point where they're actually building a plant. So initial phase is investment from X Energy and other investing partners. And then Energy Northwest will take over, the significant amount of cost after that.
So the Department of Energy investment is going to be about a 50-50 cost share?
Yeah, that's correct. It, at the end of the day, there may be some of the costs that, are not to be covered by the department, but for the most part of the appropriate costs, they will share 50% of that cost. And as you remember, you spend the money and then you get 50 cents back on the dollar. So you do have to line up the financing and the funds to fully pay the costs up front and then get reimbursed 50 cents on the dollar after that by DOE.
Yep. And of course, like any government program, there's going to be some annual appropriations, but it looks like the incoming administration has a strong emphasis on climate change and clean energy. And they have included in their platform that they want to support advanced nuclear. So
right. Yeah, this is, it's interesting. And this goes back even when, during the Empower days, if you remember, Rod, this was really a bipartisan effort and has been for many years. I think the the security of the U.S. being in the, you know, globally in the lead in nuclear technologies and keeping up with some of these other countries that are pushing forward with nuclear. It's a very important issue, both executive and, you know, in the congressional realm. And so this program really has been strongly supported by both the Republicans and the Democrats. And so we feel pretty confident that so long as we're doing our part in funding and getting this pushed along, that DOE is gonna have the ample funds to help make this happen. So we're pretty confident that so long as we can continue down the path of getting the design completed and licensed, that DOE is going to do their part to help make it happen.
Now, one of the things that is a big part of the Advanced Reactor Demonstration Project is a pretty aggressive timeline. Can you talk a little bit about how you're going to make that 5 to 7 year time frame?
Yeah, so it is very aggressive, and we, you know, all along the way, it's a lot about communications and making sure everyone understands, you know, how they fit in. So it's continuously having the interactions with NRC and knowing what they're going to need from us and the timing that we're going to be presenting things to them. So that clearly that's one of the key things is getting pushed through the design to a point that we can author a very good license submittal to them, whether that is the, you know, design certification or if it's the construction license, you know, and then the, you know, construction application and operating license application. We're still in discussions about exactly what's the best way to go, you know, with this short time frame. But we certainly are in constant communication with the NRC. And then also, Rod, in constant communications with the long lead item vendors. So we are, you know, working with them already on the timing of, you know, the initial, you know, orders with long lead material items, long lead forging items. So clearly there are some key things like that we have to certainly be in constant communication and understanding of when those particular orders need to be made in order to meet a 7 year schedule like what we're talking about. So I would tell you at this point in time, that's the most significant keys to the success of making this happen is, you know, getting the design licensing submittals, you know, done and performed in a timely manner, constant communication with the NRC, and then constant communication with these long lead vendors.
Well, I'd imagine that the long lead vendors are going to need some upfront deposits to get them started. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, that, you know, it's clear that, you know, they have to pay folks for materials. They have to, you know, pay folks to get in line and some of the forgings, you know, all those types of things. So again, between Energy Northwest, between investors, and, you know, obviously the cost share with the Department of Energy, we have to get all of that lined up. And that has, you know, that's part of the, any project like this, that's part and parcel to making it successful, is making sure that we have those various monies lined up ahead of time. So all the while you're communicating with NRC, all the while we're making these those types of things happen, we'll have the group of people on the sides working on the investment and the timeline of the cash flow. And that's as big a key, big a part of this project as the technical side of it.
Am I correct in remembering that the other awardee for the Advanced Reactor Demonstration Project, the Natrium partnership between TerraPower and General Electric, aren't they also using Energy Northwest as an operating partner?
So, you know, again, for what I know, and again, I'm not partial to anything in particular other than what has been publicized. Energy Northwest is a part of the group that was put together with, you know, that TerraPower led. Energy Northwest is not going to be the owner of the plant. There will be others who will own the plant that TerraPower is proposing. The WNP 4, Unit 4 site of the current, you know, site that has Columbia Generating Station operating on it now. WNP 1 and 4 were both B&W design plants being built, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when they stopped construction of those two plants. So those two sites are still, you know, still exist. They had site licensing going on, you know, the energy, the environmental, and now, and, you know, impact statements, all that was done. So that the WNP 4 site is one of the potential sites for TerraPower, but I don't believe that they've necessarily specifically chosen it as of yet. From what I know, it is one of the potential sites, but maybe not necessarily the final site that they've chosen at this point in time. But certainly, yes, TerraPower is considering it. And potentially then, Energy Northwest would be an operator of the site down the road.
Have you chosen a site?
Well, so X Energy and Energy Northwest have chosen WNP1. So that site is where X Energy will put the XE100, and Energy Northwest is the owner operator of that, or will be the owner operator of that. So that, you know, again, the partnership is different in that Energy Northwest has chosen to be the owner operator of our plant at WNP1. They are a part of a group that is still picking or still deciding on where the TerraPower site would be.
So for those people who aren't familiar with your Z100, can you give a brief overview of what kind of power plant you're considering building and how many modules and power output, all that neat stuff?
Certainly. So the power plant itself is what you and I would call a high temperature gas cooled reactor. Helium is the gas, if you will. That's the medium that you basically carry the heat from the primary nuclear reaction in the core. So it's a graphite moderated core. So the reactor core itself has graphite, in an annulus around the core. The graphite pebbles, if you will, so small uranium kernels, are embedded in a graphite ball the size of a cue ball or tennis ball, roughly. Those are fed continuously down the reactor core with helium flowing down through these pebbles. So as the uranium fissions and the heat is created from those fissions, helium then takes that heat, carries that heat through a cross channel over to a steam generator. So that steam generator then uses helical coils. The helium transfers its heat to water, on the other side of the tube. That's a basically a Rankine cycle where you take you heat water to create steam that goes to a turbine generator to create electricity. Our power plant will have four of these units. So each unit contains one reactor and one steam generator. We will put four of those to make the full power plant, if you will. Each nuclear, reactor pressure vessel is responsible for 200 megawatts thermal, and the total plant itself is net 80 megawatts electric. So this four pack, if you will, four unit power plant will be the equivalent of 320 megawatts electric will be the output of the plant. So that's the plant itself.
It looks like there's an awful lot of similarities between the Z100 and the HTR-PM that's being finished up in China and should be operational sometime in 2021. Is that a fair thing to say?
It's similar, but the fuel is quite different. I think their fuel is a single pass fuel in their reactor, and we have, our TRISO X fuel is a multi pass. So we're getting a much, much higher burn up on our fuel and much more, you know, effective in non-proliferation, because I mean, it's essentially using up whatever you could have used from weapons down the road or fuel down the road. It's essentially getting used up because of the multi-pass through it. So the equivalent burn up in our fuel is on the order of 165,000 megawatt
days per ton
burn up. And so It's a much more efficient plant than I believe what the Chinese are doing.
And so this fuel, online refueling, seems like it would provide you with the ability to be up even more than...
Yeah, it's a very efficient style of plant. And with the four units, you're essentially being able to run this, you know, around the clock for, you know, days, you know, years and years on end. So the refuel, you will have certain, obviously, turbine generator maintenance that will shut the plant down. But other than that turbine generator maintenance, this plant is continuously refueled and can be operated for many, many days consecutively. That's correct.
Yeah, so the Z100 is... The plant is the XE100, not the Z100. The four modules... 320 megawatts when they're all running full blast, but and you can refuel them online, so you don't really have refueling outages, but you will have some outages for inspections and maintenance and that kind of stuff. Is that...
That's correct. That's what we're assuming at this point. And I assume that whereas we don't, you know, we believe we'll be using, you know, the latest and greatest materials, and so steam generator inspections may not have to be every year or every 18 months or whatever, but certainly there'll be, you know, the ITAC that we get from the NRC as we first start up this plant. Well, I'm sure the first few years of operation, we'll have to shut some things down and look and make sure that it's responding as we, you know, as we plan it to or we design it to. But ultimately, we believe that this plant will be able to operate for, you know, for long periods of time.
Well, that's a part of the demonstration project, yeah, right? Exactly. You got to build it and and actually get some operating experience and show how your assumptions pan out in reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you in the hiring mode? That's one of the things that my listeners always ask.
Yes. Yeah, we certainly are. We are, you know, to do this most quickly, Rod, there will be over the next, you know, 12 to 15 months, it'll be a combination of us using some subcontractors. So some of the other reactor vendors out there, you know, will have some resources that we'll likely utilize until we get a full cadre of people hired into X Energy. But yes, absolutely, we are hiring, you know, specific licensing folks at this point, you know, are some of the key folks we're hiring, but also, you know, technical designers as well, some reactor designers, plant designers, civil structure designers, you know, all of the above over the next several months while we complete the design and then get into a mode of preparing the licensing documents to hand into the NRC. So the answer is a big yes. We are definitely in the hiring mode.
So how has COVID affected your operations? Are you guys working remotely?
For the most part, you know, we follow our offices in Rockville, Maryland. We've been following the Montgomery County protocols. And so we've been, you know, at times of the year, we were limited to only 30% of our, you know, of our office workers to be in the office at any one time. So we would, you know, kind of like a take turns situation for a good number of folks, but you know, a significant number of folks were working remotely for a good portion of that time, and you know, we've coped with it for the most part. We've actually, there's kind of a new normal, if you will. People have gotten used to being able to do a lot of their work from home, and you know, and keeping the pace of design. You know, as you well know, there's a lot of good with designers working in close proximity to each other to get, you know, to have little contemporary, you know, impromptu discussions, brainstorming ideas about something. But you just have to learn to do that with physical space, right? Knowing that you may be in two different buildings, you may be in two different houses, but you just got to, you have to learn to get that same brainstorming effect and impact through Zoom meetings or through other means in order to continue to proceed down the path of completing the design. So COVID has, you know, it's just brought about a different way of doing business, but we've certainly learned to do that business differently and are still making progress on the design.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of times once you've done the brainstorming where you send everybody back to their cubicles and they have to put their heads down and do a lot of work. And I would imagine that part may be even more efficient when you don't have people having to commute back and forth in the DC area.
Yeah. So that's clearly the case. We're actually getting more useful time out of some folks when they're really in the mode of doing engineering work. You're exactly correct. There is even more time in the day to get work accomplished. So that's exactly what we've taken advantage of.
Yeah, I worked in DC for 9 years and averaged about 2.5 hours a day on the road, being totally useless other than trying to keep myself from being hit.
Right. Or listening to the podcasts on the radio, right? Like,
well, that is where I got hooked on podcasts. And
exactly.
They were a lifesaver because it was more interesting to me and it gave me the ability to stay awake better than listening to music.
Right.
Listening to somebody actually talking about topics that were of interest to me. So what kind of team size do you have already?
We have roughly, I guess it's on the order of 40 to 50, specific X-Energy employees. And we've already been working, some handful of subcontractors working too, but we will quickly get up into the 150 to 200 people working on the design and licensing documents. So there is a good number of people, again, that we'll bring in as a subcontract basis, and then as quickly as we can get people hired on. So there is a good amount of ramping up that's going to be going on over the next several months.
Yeah, and X-Energy's got several other projects in the works. I know you are one of the contractors working on the Project Pele microreactor program. And then you also have your fuels manufacturing line, the TRISO X arm of your company.
Right,
So you guys are growing quite a bit.
Yeah.
Over
this. And then the space, the space program, the space support fuel for, Moon ventures, space travel, the TRISO X is being considered for several of those things. So, yeah, Cam obviously made his way early in his career with SGT supporting NASA and the space program. So he has kept ties to that pretty significantly. And so as much as we're a reactor fuel designer, for the nuclear commercial power industry, we're now quickly becoming that same support for, obviously, as you said, the microreactors for the Department of Defense, and then also for supporting space travel. So, a lot of things going on with the company, several successes, and we're happy to be ramping up with employees. We're glad to be able to do that and provide a place that people can apply and come work for some exciting things.
Now, most of your jobs are in the Rockville area, right?
That's correct. But we've been, there's some consideration for remote working. Again, the COVID has really redefined how I think we're all going to be working going forward. Because it's, it may not just be COVID in the future. There may be other reasons why we're going to have to stay remote. So it's certainly opened up our eyes and our minds to how we're going to work going forward. But you're correct. The main office is located in Rockville, and we would certainly like most of the engineering to be done there ultimately. But we've certainly not closed the door to other other resources being utilized from around the country.
Yeah, it's got to be somewhat of a adjustment for a guy like you who's been in the industry for, well, what, 35, 40 years?
Yeah, exactly.
To see so much remote work happening.
It is certainly different. And but, you know, having now grown up in the industry and knowing how important it is to have the resources, you know, have the right resources for the work that you're doing. And if it just so happens that some of those resources have to be tied in remotely, then, you know, at the end of the day, you need the right things accomplished. And so I think it's really opened up our eyes to how work needs to be done and where it can be done from. And I think, you know, when you think about the engineering resources on the, you know, in the country of India, in the Asian conference, and how much work that they've been doing now for the past 10 to 15 years remotely. And so I think it just began, you know, again, it opened up everyone's eyes originally from that support. And now with COVID, it's really driven home the point that, you know, we don't have to all be sitting in the same room or in the same building to get the work done. And so, again, we have to set up the work scope, set up what we need to get done, get the right resources on that, and then have supervisors and managers that are flexible to be able to handle people that are working on these in different locations. So it's required all of us to look at things a little bit differently.
Yeah, you got to find people that aren't those demanding folks that believe that if they can't see you, they don't think you're working.
Right. And so what, you know, for instance, in our schedule of activities and the work scope that we put together, you have to set up maybe more interim milestones so that you can check on the progress of people who are working remotely. And I think that's, you know, that's the flexible difference that we have, is that everyone needs to understand that, you know, maybe not just the end product. We'll be looking at, okay, let's see some interim milestones as you go along to make sure that you're making the progress that we all expect. So some differences that way.
So going back to your technology selection, one of the things that your website emphasizes is that the fuel is the containment.
Correct.
How does it make it easier to build your plant?
So Rod, what it will do is that, you know, both from the standpoint of how complicated the safety systems need to be in order to guarantee, you know, public safety, to not having, you know, NQA1 requirements on the actual manufacture of the components themselves. So if you are able to clearly show the regulator that this fuel is going to contain all of the radioactive elements that could be harmful to the public, and contain them in that fuel element, and you show them that fuel element is not going to get away from you, and it's not going to be destroyed and be able to spew this out into the public, then, as you can imagine, that simplifies significantly what you have to do with your systems and ultimately how you would store this fuel at the end of the day. So that's the great benefit of this fuel product itself, is how simple it can make everything to make your safety case, and then to make how you are specifically handling the fuel and the radioactivity, you know, as you operate the plant. So that's the most significant benefit of this type of fuel for our reactor design.
So you're not going to need a giant 4-inch or 4-foot thick concrete reinforced dome over your plant. Is that's a fair statement?
That's a fair statement, right? So the dome in and of itself is not a part of the safety, of the plant. Now obviously, from an economic standpoint, containing this so you're not ruining the plant from an economic standpoint if something were to happen, you know, there's also that to consider, but certainly it greatly simplifies how you build the building, the reactor building, because it's not, you know, it's not a significant part of the safety case, as we like to say. So yeah, absolutely. It will simplify it, lowers the cost to build it, and shortens the time frame that it will take to put it together.
Now, are you still in the mode of searching for suppliers for things like your turbines and circulators and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, or so you got... we are down the road pretty significantly on most of that. I think, you know, the Siemenses of the world, the General Electrics of the world, right? So we are already looking at, for instance, the turbine generator. It's going to be an off-the-shelf system. So we're not having to design something specifically, the size of it. So we looked at the size of our, you know, our thermal, you know, output of the plant in order to kind of match up with an off-the-shelf turbine generator so that we could kind of take that worry out of the equation. But helium circulators, the fuel handling system, we have been talking with folks who supply those types of things and, you know, are probably farther down the road on final selection with those types of vendors than maybe some of the other things. But those critical items we have been discussing with folks.
So the turbine, or the Rankine system that you're going to be connecting to, is, it looks like it's at supercritical type temperatures, and which is a improvement over some of the conventional reactors, because you guys produce steam temperatures in the 560 C range.
Right.
Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So we like to say high quality steam, right? So that makes it very easy if you do have a multi-purpose plant in that you might be supporting food processing or some other type of processing plant that goes on that needs high quality steam, but can then also use it for the electricity as well. So again, the multi-unit plant gives you the flexibility of, you know, having a full amount, you know, or a full turbine generator output for your electricity, but then maybe one of the other units is used specifically for steam for a processing plant. So that, you know, again, we'll talk with our ultimate customer, you know, in Energy Northwest or whoever it might be, about what their potential use is. At this point in time, this demonstration plant, we believe, is fully for electrical output. There have not been any discussions at this point in time, but there is the possibility. There is actually out in on the Hanford site, there may be the need for use of steam in some of the other activities that are going on out there. But we have not made any of those decisions at this point. At this point in time, we're still going down the path of all electrical output.
I've been to the site before, thinking of exactly where you are. There aren't too many heat customers nearby, but like you said, there might be some on the Hanford Reservation, right? But that's a big place.
It's a big place.
and some very long steam lines if you wanted to send it someplace else. Yeah. So what, Darren, are there anything else that you'd like to share about your project that I haven't talked about so far?
Yeah, so one of the things, I was just out there last week, as a matter of fact. I visited Richland. We spoke with a lot of community leaders, the municipal leaders. I got to tell you, the community is very, very excited about this. They see, you know, from their history of what they did with Hanford and the plutonium production, you know, back in the day, they now see them, you know, kind of being a gateway to the beginning of this advanced reactor demonstration, you know, as a gateway to the world for this. So if this is the first one up and going with the TRISO fuel and with all of this, they are very excited and supportive to be the place to get this going. So that was one thing I would, you know, just like to share. It's a very, very pro-nuclear place. They're very positive about making this happen. And then also the site itself, you know, again, they were well down the road of construction of other nuclear plants back in the 80s when they stopped construction. So, for instance, the water intake from the Columbia River already exists. We're not going to have to disturb the river in order to be able to get water to this plant. And the fact that there's even a pump house that has all of the pumps for a nuclear power plant that's a lot bigger than the one that we're getting ready to do. So there are significant resources that already exist. There'd be some refurbishments, obviously, going forward. But as far as the environmental impact for some of the things we have to do, this is a pretty minimal impact to the environment that we would be doing because of using a site that was previously under construction for a nuclear plant already. So that's, it's a real benefit to us, from a demonstration standpoint, having the ability to use a site that was previously targeted for nuclear power plants, and in fact had gone down the road, somewhat before.
And from a schedule point of view, the NEPA process is one of the long poles in a tent. So
right.
I would imagine you're pretty far down the road on that already.
Yeah. So we, again, we're pulling what had been done previously. We've been in discussions with the NRC about, just doing an update to what was done previously as opposed to going completely down a new path. So you're absolutely correct. We've already been in discussions and are starting to pull, all the documents that, had been, handled previously. And so, and we'll be going from there.
That's pretty exciting stuff. Yeah. I'm looking forward to keeping track of you guys and hearing that you're remaining on schedule to deliver an operating reactor by what, the end of 2027?
That's correct. That was the original. We actually put in a schedule that even accelerated it from that, but that was the expectation with Congress and the DOE as they put this all together. So that ultimately is the target, is getting something to the grid by the end of 2027.
Oh, I don't think anybody's going to complain if you accelerate it. I think there'll be some really happy people.
I think we did that so that we'd have some contingency space, some contingency time in place. So, as you well know, when something like this gets started. So, well, Rod, I'll be happy. We can do this, multiple times during the project. I'd be glad to get on and give you updates and talk about where we're at. So.
That'd be great.
At another time down the road to do this again.
Yeah, and maybe at some point in the not too distant future, we'll be in the same place at the same time and be able to keep up to date face to face.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate you coming on. I think the listeners of the Atomic Show will be happy to hear that there is some real serious movement happening in advanced reactors and something that we've been following for a long time.
We're
starting to get close.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. The XE-100, as some people affectionately like to call the Z-100, the XE-100 plant is, we're very excited about it. I would just say, it's certainly, for the significant part of it, it is not new technology, right? They've been operating high temperature gas reactors for decades, right? But certainly the combination of the advancements in the fuel, being able to recirculate the fuel multiple times through the core, making it much more efficient, the quality of the steam that'll be coming out of this generator, it's we're very, very excited, and we think it's a package that's going to be very popular once we get this up and demonstrated.
And I'm sure there are lots of customers around the world who are just eagerly waiting for you to be able to show them something operating.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been, multiple people. Again, nobody likes to be the first, but they certainly are excited about the potential once they see it up and going. So, we're looking forward to having multiple plants around the world in the not too distant future.
All right. Thanks, Darren.
Rod, have a great day.
There's a way, such a better way. Today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way.